And now something completely different.
Good afternoon. I'm speaking to you live just outside Los Angeles.
I like to think balding is just God's way of saying, now let's see you get laid.
Is it true that if you don't use it, you lose it?
What I'd really like to do is put the greatness of this man in perspective.
The hair loss community has a lot to be thankful for, having you as a spokesperson.
You mean you just call this guy up?
About life and about reality.
And now, America's number one reality radio show for men. Live from Los Angeles, it's Spencer Coburn's The Bald Truth.
Hey guys, welcome to the show, 888-659-3727. Thank you so much for hanging in there while we were trying to get ourselves on the air. Andrew Zarian's actually setting us up live from his favorite bar in Queens, New York, and that could be why we had the little delay. But again, thanks a lot. If you're new to the broadcast, don't know who I am, why I am here. I'm a consumer advocate for men and women dealing with hair loss. I am the author of The Bald Truth and The Truth About Women's Hair Loss. Also happen to be the founder of the American Hair Loss Association and the International Alliance of Hair Restoration Surgeons. Now, it sounds like a lot, but you know what? I've been doing this for just about 20 years. And if you are actually watching the broadcast and you're seeing this old dude with a relatively full head of hair, I just need to tell you, full disclosure, this is a partial sham. I have been lucky enough to save a lot of hair using FDA-approved medication, but there's a quasi comb-over, a lot of hairspray, paint the back of my head. It's a whole thing. But you know what? I am 51 years old, and I started to lose my hair at the tender age of 21. So I feel pretty fucking fortunate that I have been able to make the right moves, somehow have the wherewithal to step back and not make some of the disastrous mistakes that so many guys out there who are dealing with hair loss unfortunately make. And we're going to get into all that stuff in a second, because usually my opening is pretty long, but we've got some guys holding on the line. I want to first welcome my trusty sidekick, the original hair transplant mentor, Mr. Joseph Tillman, live from TBT Studios in Vancouver, British Columbia. Joe, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm just dandy. How about yourself?
You know what? I can't complain. It's great to be live. We took a couple of weeks off this summer.
Yeah.
You had some issues, which you can't – I don't want to talk about on the air. But, you know, I'm glad everything worked out.
It has put me into a mood, though. The mood is called zero fucks given.
Okay. Well, don't ruin the show because of that. But listen, what we want to do tonight initially, and I don't know if you saw this on Facebook, but – you probably did. Dr. Alan Bauman, Bauman Medical, did artist robotic hair transplant today. And he was posting a lot of live video on Facebook, which was, in my view, is pretty compelling. Now, what I want to do is I want to play a little bit of this video to kind of give guys an idea of what went on today in Dr. Bauman's office. And then I'll bring the guys on the air to talk about things. So let's see if we can make this happen.
Worms. These are Frank's follicles, just freshly harvested using the artist's robotic assisted system. Looking excellent. Some good looking grafts right there.
Well, what I want to do now is I'm going to bring Dr. B on. I know Frank is on hold as well. I want him to kind of give us a little rundown of what happened today, and then we're going to speak to Frank and kind of get his impressions of the entire procedure. And this is his second artist procedure. So this is a guy that sees hair transplants all the time. This is a guy that cuts people's hair. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that decided to go back for a second round, obviously because, you know, he had a good experience. But let's see if I could pop up Dr. B here. Hey, Dr. B, is that you?
Spencer, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
So, I'm doing fantastic.
Listen, we
try Hair Loss Awareness Month.
Well, thank you so much. You're probably like the one of the few people that actually knows that it's Hair Loss Awareness Month. Or promotes the fact.
You're right.
Or promotes the fact that it's Hair Loss Awareness Month. But I always appreciate when you do that. Now, we tried to put the segments that you had on Facebook together. There's a lot of stuff on there. And I figured we would just kind of show some of the more interesting aspects of the day. But I do think it was really cool that you were, you know, just kind of, you know, at different parts, you know, during different parts of the surgery, you kind of just would put your camera on, go live, explain what was going on, and then cut it off.
Yeah, I noticed you chose all the videos that didn't have me in there. thanks a lot for that.
I actually have some that have you. It's very exciting.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, one of the things, and again, you heard me saying this, one of the criticisms that continues to come up, one of the false narratives that is being, in my view, false narratives that is being kind of put out there, not only in the online world, but, you know, in the, you know, in the hair transplant industry or field by certain physicians, is that this machine, this robot, is causing a tremendous amount of damage to the donor area and also to the extracted grafts. And we know that's not the case.
Yeah, that's for sure not the case. And I will tell you firsthand, you know, having extracted literally 2 million FUE grafts in my practice, if this machine or any process was hurting the hair follicles, we honestly wouldn't be doing it. I mean, there's just no way, shape, or form we would be doing it unless it was safe.
So why do you think that is the narrative that's being put out there? Is it because again, in my view, and I always say this, I think a lot of guys are concerned about losing their autonomy. There's a lot of guys out there who think, oh, wait a second. If I have this robot and the next guy has this robot, then what makes me different than my competition? And what I try to tell guys is what makes you different than your competition, and for you, for instance, Dr. Bauman, is that you have a well-trained staff. You've been doing this forever, since I've been in the industry, just about. And, you know, there's much more to a hair transplant than simply harvesting the grafts.
Absolutely right. I mean, look, anybody can go to Home Depot and pick up a couple of cans of paint and pick up a canvas. But for you to put that paint on the canvas in the right way to make it look like something good and something aesthetic, you know, not everybody could do that. I certainly can't paint on a canvas, but, you know, my canvas is the scalp and I use the follicles to create the result.
And that's very well said. And that's the thing. And that's why I try to tell some of these guys who ask me, hey, why are you starting to talk more about this device? And I said at the beginning of the program, look, the truth is it's a mess out there. You know what happened with the NeoGraft, you know, and you have been you were one of the biggest proponents. And, you know, you've had tremendous success with the NeoGraft. But it's not because of the NeoGraft. It's because you guys knew what you were doing in your practice.
Right. I mean, we were making good grafts using a very primitive tool, some of which I designed myself back in, in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002. We were getting good quality grafts. It's just that we weren't getting them fast and we weren't getting them efficiently out of the scalp. So NeoGraft just took us from 800 grafts a day to 1,500 grafts a day within like 90 days. So, you know, it turned a small procedure into a normal procedure. And obviously we took it further from there. But the point is that, you know, when I first saw the artist's device in Denver, back in 2011, right after the FDA approval, I was not so keen on that device.
And
I was not so happy, honestly. I mean, I went there with ready to go. I mean, just like, hey, what do we need to do to get started? And when I saw the procedure, honestly, I was like, these grafts are not like what we do with the technology that we had. So I was a bit concerned and I put the brakes on at that time. And I had to wait. I mean, I had to wait for this device to catch up.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, I was the first guy to say that, listen, this is not ready for prime time. I cannot be involved in any capacity. I mean, I did the first live artist hair transplant with Jim Harris because I thought it was going to be, you know, interesting radio or interesting internet, in a cool broadcast. But I still, you know, I did it with Sarah Wasserbauer, too, who's doing, you know, who's part of the original testing of the device.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way. You know, this isn't working well yet. They haven't gotten it. But, you know, it evolved, you know, so rapidly. And the company really did listen to the concerns of you know, certain physicians my concerns and suggestions. And now there's no doubt it is at a point now where I would say it's pretty hard-pressed. I mean, if you're comparing donor to donor and graft to graft from even the best manual guys, it's really difficult to see the difference, if there is a difference.
Correct. And that's the thing that got us excited about ARTIS, because we knew it could do, you know, the grafting that we wanted. It could do the harvesting that we wanted. And not to mention all the other things that are coming down the pike.
That's right.
You know, in terms of the technology that ARTIS brings to the table.
It looks like Frank's been on hold for a long time. I want to say hi to him, and I really appreciate him taking the time to call in. Hey, is this Frank?
Yes, it is.
Frank, how are you, man? Hey, listen, I'm sorry to keep you on hold for so long. That's you know,
totally all right.
It's a radio show. That's what happens, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But listen, I saw you online today. You looked – first of all, I know this is your second procedure. So yes. Obviously you're happy with the first procedure. Let's talk about, you know, what made you decide to – A, go with Dr. Bauman, but B, you know, decide to go with the robot, because a lot of guys are initially kind of concerned. Wait a second, this is a machine. Is this really right. going to be as good as a guy doing it by hand?
Hi, getting back to the first question, the reason why I went to Dr. Bauman, because I know about Dr. Bauman for over 15 years, and I've seen his work for over 15 years, and the results are phenomenal. I mean, people are very happy, never had a problem. The mannerism, his staff is incredible. And I had to go see him, and I asked him what he could do for me.
Yeah.
And what he did for me was recognized within 6 to 7 months, and people were saying to me, "Oh my God, look at your hairline."
Well, how long have you been dealing with hair loss? Obviously, for a while, because you were significantly bald.
Well, you know what? I mean, I've been, you know, I'm 59 years old,
right?
And you get hair loss, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, and I had a spot in the middle of my forehead that was bald, so I used to cover up with my fingers.
Right.
And when we went through the procedure and he shaved my head, I looked and the bald spot was about almost as big as a half a dollar.
Yeah.
I was like, holy smokes. Plus my peaks went back, you know. And he goes, this is what we're going to do. It's going to come out fantastic. And da la la la. And it came out amazing. You know, I send all my male clients and female clients to go see him just to talk to him.
Right.
Because he's so knowledgeable. He's so honest. And he tells it like it is. And
I'll tell you, Alan, you gave this guy an incredible script, by the way.
well, you know what?
No script.
Because it's the truth.
No. Listen, I have known Alan since I've been in this business. Dr. B was one of the first doctors that I recommended to the International Alliance of Hair Restoration Surgeons. We would not have him on the show, and he would not be a friend of this program if I didn't have the same admiration and respect that you have for him. So,
and I'm sure, you know, my female clients that I have that I sent to him, they're just ecstatic. I had a client who comes from Canada. She's a snowbird, and the top of her hair was very, very thin. I said, "You must go see my friend." And within 1 year, her hair doubled.
Yeah.
She is so ecstatic. I mean, you know, he loves what he does, and he don't accept anything else.
Yeah.
He wants the best, and he does it from his heart, and that's why he's successful, and I think he's the greatest guy.
Well, listen, you came back for a second turn. Even if, you know, he's the greatest guy in the world, and obviously even if you thought he was the best but you didn't have a good procedure – you would be like, okay, it didn't work out for me. Obviously, it worked out well for you. So let's talk. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what it was like to have a robotic procedure.
It was painless. It was interesting. I don't know in detail how to explain it any more than that. Yeah, there was no problem.
Well,
nothing. No pain or nothing. I mean,
Dr. B, maybe you could explain Frank's case. And I know that this was the second procedure today. Maybe you can explain his history and the case.
Yes. So Frank has a Norwood 4 pattern before he came to see me, which means he had a receding hairline and a balding spot, thinning spot, and a crown. And the initial procedure that we did about 6 months ago was to reframe the face. And so what we did is we recreated the hairline and the temporal points. And so that's what you see at the six-month photos, is that the facial features are starting to have more definition. The face is going to have a more youthful and aesthetic appearance as that hair starts to grow in. The area I wanted to fix for Frank was the crown area, so we worked hard on that today. Some of the video that you'll see posted up on the Facebook event page is me working, making the sights in very, very particular angle, orientation, and position in the crown to match his normal swirl. And so, you know, that's a bit of the artistry that goes into that area. And then, of course, to do a little touch-up on the hairline to densify some of the really, really important areas like the front and center, and any other areas that we're thinning out behind. You know, we accomplished that today.
And just so you know, when we post this broadcast and clips of this broadcast, we will put some links to some of the video that you have up there. And also we'll provide some images of Frank so that, you know, prospective patients and our listeners and viewers could check it out as well. I don't want to
we'll be updating that as we go along. I mean, you know, the event page link will live, you know, on Facebook. So that's a good way to get over to look at some of the videos and the still images even that we have of some of the grafts and you know, the staff also having a good time, you know, doing the procedure and doing their work, whether it be the implantation part or even just the symphony that goes on during the robotic part, you know, the extraction part of the process, you know, technicians working the user interface, one by the bed, you know, me and the other technician by the bedside, you know, and then looking at the graft. So they can see all of that on the Facebook page, which is kind of neat.
Joe, I know you had a question.
Yeah. Hey, Frank, I'm just curious, you know, one of the questions that I get a lot of times when people are talking about the artist is how does, in your case, after you had your first procedure, how did the donor zone feel physically? Like, I'm not talking about from a pain perspective, but as far as the density perspective goes. And could you tell any sort of difference after everything healed up and returned to somewhat of a normal state?
Yeah. My hairline came down further. Mm-hmm. The density was consistent with what I've had behind it.
Okay.
My peaks, you know, where it rounds out, filled in smoothly without any line. It just did it naturally with a natural look to it.
I think what Joe is trying to get to is as far as the back of your scalp.
Yeah.
How did that feel and look after your hair began to grow in and after the healing process? Did it look at like it was depleted? Did it feel different? Or because a lot of guys are really concerned about kind of getting this, you know, moth-eaten effect, especially.
You're talking about my crown area?
I'm talking about the area that the hair was actually removed from, the donor area.
It looks short, but it fills in beautifully.
Okay.
If that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, one big concern that a lot of people have, especially from some of the information that's been circulated and the misinformation and the false narratives that are out there about this, you know, the artist procedure, is that it leaves larger gaps. There may be more of a moth-eaten effect in the donor area. I mean, there's all kinds of rumors out there. And we've seen, especially
right.
I got
what you're saying.
Yeah.
The donor area that was taken from me from my hairline and my peaks and my temple area, there was minimal to none. My hair is still basically as thick as it was in the back, slightly thinner.
Right.
No botching, no shelving, no it just looks natural.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks natural. And my hairdresser friends come to me and say, wow, I can't believe it. You know, so as far, I hope I answered your question.
You did. That's actually perfect. And
that was a great answer. Yeah. And he used a term there that tells me that he's seen strip case patients before where he's talking about the shelving.
Yeah.
With the shelving in the donor zone. So, yeah, he's got experience around transplant patients. It's good.
Yeah.
And if I may say, I have quite a few male clients that I do for years that have seen Dr. Bauman, and there's none of that. There's no shelving. There's no lines.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, no nothing. So I mean, it's you'd never know.
Well, listen,
great. Actually, great to hear.
I'll give you a quick story.
Yeah.
One of my clients, Mark, I've been doing hair for a long time. And I said to him for years, you got to go see Dr. Bauman. I mean, he had a patch in the front. The sides went back. He had a patch missing in the middle. Okay? I mean, you know, unbelievable. He has a full head of hair. There's no shelving. There's no marks. There's no nothing. And, you know, of course he takes all the vitamins that are necessary and whatnot. But Alan, I hope you could post him on the internet, on Facebook, to show him what he started with and where he is now. And it's amazing. Just amazing.
We'll have to get his permission for that, you know, in terms of HIPAA privacy and all.
I think Mark will give you the pass on that.
Well, I think here's the thing. The bottom line is you are a hairstylist. You chose to go and have this procedure performed with Dr. B and to have the artist procedure performed based on, you know, I guess years of probably seeing Dr. B's patients.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, I think that's a tremendous testimony. And obviously this is not the Dr. B infomercial, but the truth of the matter is you're a happy patient. So you have, yep. You know, we love hearing guys like yourself who have had a great experience, who went in for a second procedure based on his initial experience. And the fact that you're happy, I mean, that's what this is all about. There's so many guys that we deal with. Who, I mean, this is a very difficult discipline of cosmetic surgery that most people can never fully comprehend until they're involved in this industry. And most of the guys, sadly, even to this day, that we speak with are unhappy. So when we get it, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And if I may say, I'm a hairdresser. I have a critical eye.
Yeah.
That's my business. And I see, you know, even when I see a client with hair thinning on the front, I said, you know what? You could fix this. You don't need surgery. See Dr. Bauman. He could fix this for you. I guarantee you. If he can't, he'd tell you he can't.
Right.
I promise you he could. And that's the confidence I have in him because his results, and I'm not trying to talk about Mr. Bauman all the time, but I am because he's really, really, really good at doing.
He changed your life. You know, you have the right.
Chances of what he does.
You have the right. Listen, if someone helped me like that, I'd be, you know, screaming from the rafters, man, in the world now.
Listen, take my number. I'll see what I can do for you.
Well, listen, Frank, I really appreciate you taking this time to call into the program. Go ahead.
Anytime.
Yeah, and I'm really glad. I'm looking forward to seeing the results of your second procedure. We will obviously you gave Dr. B permission. We will be adding your images to Bald Truth Talk and to the Bald Truth. And we'll also be adding them into some segments that we're going to be making out of this broadcast so that our listeners and our viewers and our readers can kind of see for themselves, you know, the results that you've had so far and also what you went through today, which when I say what you went through, it didn't seem like you went through much. It seemed like you were just kind of sitting there and it wasn't that unenjoyable.
No, it was totally, totally unpainful. I mean, a little bit of throbbing when I get home, no big deal. Take a Motrin 800. That's it.
Right. All right. Well, listen, man, I wish you the best of luck. Happy healing.
Thank you, Dr.
B, anything that you want to say to prospective patients who are considering? I mean, listen, you're not just out there pushing the artist. You are doing, FUE, still, I'm assuming, using a neograft to some degree and probably using some other instrumentation as well, right?
We do, but I think the most important thing is that understanding that there are surgeons that are out there who only do surgery, and a big focus of my practice is really hair restoration as a whole. And so we have a huge component of the practice that is exclusively dedicated to the medical management of hair loss.
Right.
And a lot of guys don't really understand that there are effective treatments that they can use, be disciplined with, but they can use that are going to get great results to keep the hair that they have. And of course, obviously, if they need transplantation to restore the hair they've lost, we're there for them to do that as well.
Well, dude, listen, I'm a prime example of that, and Joe's a prime example of what a hair transplant can do for somebody.
Sure.
So when we're sitting here side by side and people are seeing us on camera, and yes, I'm very self-deprecating, but it's true. Listen, I have a quasi-comb over. You even joked about in the chat when I said it, and I paint the back of my bald spot. But it works for me, and I've been lucky enough to save a lot of hair using finasteride, using FDA-approved medication, stuff that you offer in your practice. So it works.
Yeah, for sure. We, you know, it works. We track it and so forth. And so for each patient, the design of the treatment plan might be a little bit different, whether it's a male patient or a female patient and what they're trying to accomplish. Now, so, you know, we do long-distance consultations, patients all over the world. I mean, Boca is a beautiful destination location. I'm lucky and blessed to live here, and it's a great place to visit and to have a hair transplant.
Now, at some point, if you could help me, I don't want to dye my hair, but if we can reverse the gray naturally somehow, that would be awesome.
Yeah, well,
I want to be there when that happens.
I think they're working on that. Another 5 years, right?
Yeah, so exactly. Listen, dude, I don't care if it turns blue. I really don't. At this stage of my life, I'm just happy to have it on my head. So, guys, I want
to be a blue hair.
That's right. I want to thank Dr. Alan Bauman, IAHRS accepted member. His office is down in Boca Raton, Florida. You can check him out at IAHRS.org and, of course, BaumanMedical.com. And, Frank, listen, dude, thank you so much. It was really cool to see you live on Facebook today. And, you know, happy growing, man. I'm glad that you are, you know, so far, you know, successful with your hair transplant procedures.
Thank you. Thank
congratulations,
Frank. Anytime you need me, let me know.
All right, man. All right. I'll call you tomorrow. All right.
Listen, with that blue hair, I can make you a rock star.
You know what? Hook me up. I'll come down. I expect a free haircut.
That's fine. We could fit it in.
All right, man. All right. You take care.
Thanks a lot,
Frank. I'll see you in the morning.
Okay, Alan.
Yeah. Good luck.
Okay. Bye, bye.
Alan, man. Another happy patient. I think it's really important. Alan, I should call you Dr. Bauman, but we know each other. I can call you Alan. But, you know, it really is let me get this guy off here. It really is important that patients understand that, you know, it's not for everybody. Like you said, you know, sometimes medical management is the way to go. Surgery really is a last resort. I know that you believe that too. Otherwise, you wouldn't be, I think, focusing so much of your practice on the medical management of hair loss.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the medical management is really important. You know, we have physicians that are coming and learning these types of things through the hair coaching program and so forth. But, you know, if a patient does need a hair transplant, like you could see with Frank, I mean, he was comfortable tonight. He was awake and talking, and he told you what he had in terms of discomfort. He took a Motrin and that's it.
Right.
And he won't.
It's hard to tell
that
he just had surgery just talking to him. It's like, I mean, it sounds like he just, you know, got home from work.
He's actually more lucid than both of us at this point. Yeah. I think I'm drinking, so.
That might be true. And, you know, look, he's been in the chair. He came in the chair, 13 hours ago. You know, he came in at, you know, 6:37 in the morning. He was in the office. So he's had spent a pretty long day like the rest of us.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
But amazing. Yeah, he's a great guy, and he'll get a great looking result. You know, and I guess the thing about the donor area, you know, there's artistry to that as well. And, you know, there's a degree of planning and execution to make the donor area look good. You can't just, you know, harvest out a big, you know, square, rectangular, you know, TV screen shaped block back there, you know.
Well, and we've talked about that many times on the program. We see that all the time. We see guys who are coming back from, you know, having, you know, going to these cosmetic tourism destinations. Turkey being one of them, and they end up having like this 16:9 aspect ratio television screen on the back of their scalps, and you know, it doesn't matter what device is being used if it's not performed well, and if people don't understand how to you know, dissect the grafts in the right way, it's going to be a mess. It's sad though. I think that, and I'm trying to change the false narrative that's out there about the artist. You know, a lot of people are focusing on what it used to be, not what it is today. And I think that, you know, you bring a lot of credibility to the device, Dr. B, because you're a guy who has a very critical eye, and, you know, you're not out there to try to destroy a practice that took 20 years to build.
Correct. Absolutely. You know, we're trying to continue to get better and better results. I mean, you know that, you know, here at Bauman, we think about hair all the time. If there's a way to make the procedure better, more comfortable, heal faster, you know, we're doing all that, you know, as much as we possibly can. We're innovating and pioneering, and look at some things that work and some things that don't. You know, I got a closet full of instruments that didn't work, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so does does everybody in cosmetic surgery. I was actually recently, I spoke about this on my other show. I was recently invited into this plastic surgeon's office, and he takes me into this back room to show me all of his laser devices that are just sitting there collecting dust.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, you know, if these things were so great, why would they be sitting there collecting dust? Because in the end, it turns out that's all about marketing. And there's a lot of bullshit that's being sold. A lot of guys just pick up these devices. They spend the money so they can draw the patients in. Sadly, there are doctors out there who are doing this with the artists as well. But the artist is kind of a one-of-a-kind medical device. And I am not sure what's coming down the pike, but I have to tell you that at least at this stage, I don't think there's going to be anything coming to the market next year that's going to be the next great thing replacing the artist. What's going to happen is the artist is just going to continue to evolve.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's been upgraded so many times even since we've had the device.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to the next upgrade and the stuff they're talking about, you know, a year down the road. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's super cool stuff. So,
Dr. Bellman, really exciting. You're saying earlier, and I think this is really compelling, that, you know, you're already set up to buy the robot when it first came out in 2011 or shortly after it had FDA approval. But you put the brakes on it because what you were seeing at the time it wasn't up to your standards. At what point? Where were you, and at what point, or what was it that you saw where it was kind of like a light bulb went off, or like, okay, now it's ready for prime time? What was the defining moment that made you take the leap?
I think the turning point was matching up a 0.8 with a 19 gauge and saying, yes, this can make the type of incision that I want, and these grafts are looking more like what I'm used to seeing on a day-to-day basis.
So it had nothing to do with our phone conversation.
Well, like I said, it was a lot of discussion.
Yeah.
It wasn't an instant thing. But
I'm just I'm busting your balls, man.
You were included in that.
Look, the phone conversation was very important, Spencer, because I trust your opinion. Like I said, you've owned the crystal ball for a while. So, I trust your opinion, and that's why I called you, and that's why I had my staff call you.
No, and
really
I
what you thought.
I really appreciated that, and it really showed me that you guys and that you really had enough faith in me to bounce this off of me. And I wasn't going to I would have told you, listen, dude, you're going to destroy your practice. It's not a good idea. You know how I am.
True. And here's the thing, you know, I mean, look, the bald truth has been a clearinghouse of information and, you know, unfortunately, sometimes probably gossip as well.
Yes, sure.
For physician side and also for the patient side. So, you know, you're a lightning rod for that information. And that's one of the reasons why people tune in to find out from you what's the real deal. You know, what's the bald truth, so to speak. I mean, that's your namesake.
Right.
And that's why we give you a call. So it's a piece of the puzzle.
Well, dude, I appreciate that. And again, I was just busting your balls, but thanks for the compliment.
Yeah, no worries, man.
Thanks for the compliment. And we're going to let you go. I know you probably got stuff to do with your family.
Yeah, for sure. I got to call Frank and see how he's doing because he didn't tell me on the air. But, yeah. No. He said, there you go. I don't have to make a post-op call tonight because he told me. He's taking an 800 motion and he's going to sleep.
That's true. Actually, you could probably write that in your chart.
Yeah, I will.
Right, man. All right, well, listen, great. It was great having you on. Great to talk to you. Obviously, people can find you again through the IHRS or directly through BaumanMedical.com. And, you know, look, I am a believer, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this device evolves because there's no doubt in my mind the industry is getting so bad. It's getting crazier and crazier. We need to figure out a way to really standardize it. And to me, this is really the only hope at this point.
And that's what this is about, is, you know, trying to find a common denominator. No, it's not really the right way to describe it, but just a baseline for quality in the current status of this industry, which is a complete mess.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I want patients to be able to find a facility where, at the very least, they're not going to have their grafts destroyed, their precious donor area destroyed. At the very least, eventually, you know, the artist staff, their, you know, trainers will be able to train doctors, even novices, to set the right parameters so as not to destroy someone's donor area.
Right.
At the very least.
Well, there's a lot to go in that goes into it, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do everything that we can to try to make the industry safer and better and get better and better results for our patients. And that's, you know, that's where our heart is. That's what we like to do.
Well, Dr. Bauman, listen, I really appreciate your time.
Great to be on with you tonight, as always, Spencer and Joe, and we'll catch up soon.
We'll talk soon. Yeah, take
care. Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye now.
888-659-3727. Listen. Anytime you have a doctor on, anytime you have their patient on, it sounds like an hour-long infomercial for them. But, you know, but the truth is, I know what it's like, you know. I mean, if I'm happy with something, a product or service, whatever it is, I'm the type of guy who really would do anything to talk about it.
I am, too. I mean, it's like if I'm so happy about something, I might even make a career out of it.
Yeah. Well said. Exactly.
It's like, what was it? Was it old shaver commercial? Was it Remington? Yeah. I like the shaver so much, I bought the company.
That's right. That's right. What's that guy's name?
Oh, I can't remember. I remember that when I was a kid.
Yeah. Maybe it was Remington.
I think it was Remington.
Yeah. Maybe that's his name.
It wasn't Norelco because my – see, and this is what's funny is my pop – was a big Norelco fan. He actually gave me my first shaver. It was a Norelco. And so anytime the Remington commercial came on, I was like, oh, Remington. It's not as cool.
It's not as cool. The thing about Norelco, it had the three-head thing, which seemed really cool.
I still have that shaver, too.
Do you?
Yeah. I've taken it with me.
Quality.
Yeah, it still works. God.
But I want our listeners and viewers to know, listen – I mean, you got to expect if someone has a surgery with a doctor and it's his second surgery, he's going to say whatever he can. He's going to promote the shit out of him. Some guys think that's the reason they're even coming onto the program. But the truth is, I thought it was really cool. This guy had an artist's procedure on Facebook, basically, or at least, you know, a lot of it was presented on Facebook Live, which was very cool. And I was fascinated when I was watching him. I was like, this guy just looks like, like it's a walk in the park for him. And you don't see that. When I used to do these live events, no matter how much these guys tried to appear that they weren't in pain, you know, especially during the anesthetic portion of the procedure, you knew it was killing them.
Yeah.
You know, those fucking needles hurt.
It's not bad.
Yeah. But things have definitely changed. And listen, I think it's important that everyone understands that I am still a fan. And when I say a fan, I still think it's important that consumers understand when it comes to hair transplantation, none of these procedures are one size fits all. I think strip is still needed in this industry, even though it is going by way of the dodo. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate in my view because I do believe that if you are a high Norwood or going towards that point in your life, you're never going to get 100% of your donor with FUE. It just can't be done. They have to go outside what is considered the safe donor zone.
I'm the walking billboard for that approach of stripping out, high Norwood, strip out, then go FUE, which I've not done yet. But if I were to have more hair work done, it would only be FUE at this point. I am stripped out.
You're stripped out.
And I mean, I still got some laxity, but I'm done with strip, and FUE is the answer for me at this point. And that strategy, which is the only one I had to begin with, but that strategy has worked out well.
Now tomorrow or tonight, it's possible I'll get an email, not from the person I normally get the email from, because I have chosen to no longer, have any communication with this person. But I make an email or two about kind of this, this trend of continuing to talk about robotic surgery. And it could be from anybody, because I've been getting a lot of shit lately from my membership. Mm-hmm. And it's important that everyone knows that it is not in my financial best interest to talk this robot up. period. I have, you know, I said it a year and a half ago when I decided to consult for the company. But the truth of the matter is most of the doctors that are part of my organization, most of the doctors that I consult for, and not consult as far as sales, but, you know, speak to about their practices and, you know, help them, you know, with, you know, resolving issues with unhappy patients, so on and so forth. They're not using the robot, you know, and a lot of them don't want to use the robot. And a lot of them are anti-artists. Yep. There's one in particular that we received an email through the American Hair Loss Association this week about a blog post that was posted by one of our members about his concerns about the artist. This doc, this patient was actually considering an artist procedure. Now, I can't blame this doctor because this doctor does great work by hand. This he does great strip and great FUE. He does killer eyebrows. He is probably one of the biggest up-and-coming influencers in this field. But in my view, he's basing some of his concerns on a false narrative that's out there and also an older narrative that's out there. But it doesn't make a difference. Well, you know what we told this patient? This guy knows what he's talking about as far as the types of procedures that he's offering.
Right.
And if you're considering surgery, you know, you don't have to consider the device. Consider the surgeon first. Because in the end, it's about your end result.
Well, you got to consider the surgeon first because the results of that surgeon are what's bringing you in.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the way I look at this is, you know, I've never been anti-artists. When it first came out, I remember my first comment about the idea of this was, well, if they have a robot doing heart surgery, then hair surgery can't be that much more difficult, as difficult, which probably is more difficult from a dexterity point of
view. But I had to, let's face it, and you're right to be skeptical because I was, but I had to convince you a little bit. I had to kind of show
you.
I had to show you, hey, look, you got to see these comparison photos. You got to see what's really going on.
Well, what's happened is there's been a progression, which is what I imagine has happened with you. You know, I know for a fact that's what happened with you. You're very skeptical, and you kept seeing updates and improvements. And
I was beyond skeptical. I was like, this is not working. So and see, I'm used to. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Like Dr. Bauman said, I'm used to medical device companies that create the device, and that's it. And then they try to just market it. And then they try to just figure out a way to kind of market around its deficiencies.
Well,
these guys actually evolved.
Yeah, and that's what you see at, you know, every year at the ISHRS conference. There's a floor that's separate from everything else that is strictly set up for the vendors.
It's like it's a Turkish bazaar.
Which includes artists.
Right.
But NeoGraft, AlphaGraft, you know, all kinds of graphs.
Yeah.
You name it, there's a graft.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cole's
machine. DeVore's machine.
You got the Turks with their punch business. They're very good, by the way.
Yeah.
You got just all kinds of stuff. There's hundreds of people that show up just to hawk their wares.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is that they're all – you know, they're obviously there to sell. I mean, that's their job. That's, you know, that's what makes the world go round. But they're the same thing every year.
Yeah.
But with the artists, it is different every year. There are improvements. There are modifications. Because as I learned through you, they're taking this input from their doctors and they are applying it. They're taking input from you. They are applying it and making these changes to where now we have the artist robot using 0.8 and 0.85 punches. We now have greater dexterity and a range from the donor zone that they can take from.
They're actually using 0.9 and 0.8. And okay. I guess they're going to be I'm assuming, and who knows, if they're doing 0.9 and 0.8, that eventually they're going to go somewhere in the middle and do a 0.85, but who knows?
And we'll see. But the point is that they're improving it. They're reducing the size of the punch, which was one of the biggest thresholds for them earlier on, and for me to even take a second look at it. But it's just improving across the board. And so, yeah, I was against it. at the beginning, not so much as like, you know, completely closed-minded, like it's, you know, this is, you know, never going to work, blah, blah, blah. It was, well, maybe there's potential with it. Who knows? Right now, no, but maybe in the future. At this point, I'm seeing that potential being realized to where it is a completely different machine than it was even a couple of years ago. It looks the same, but it's not the same.
Different well, I think I was actually maybe a little bit more critical, to be honest with you, because I believed initially that looking at the size of the punches, that it was going to be kind of like follicular holocaust, man. I mean, I was really concerned about it, and I said something. And I didn't go out there publicly, you know, bashing this device because I didn't know how it was going to evolve. But I told the doctors how I felt. And I was like, listen, you know, this, if they're willing to improve it, then yeah, great. You know, let's see what happens. And you know what? They fucking did it.
Yeah.
They did it. And they did it because they realized that – I still think they probably would have still sold a lot of devices, a lot of stuff in Asia, you know, different parts of the world where there's not a lot of – you know, you can have you can do really well in different parts of the world where you're not going to hear a lot of shit from patients in the U.S. and the U.K. and stuff like that. But they didn't make that choice, and they made the smart move. When you have a guy like Alan Bauman who decides to attach himself to it, it's a pretty big deal. So all I'm saying is this. I don't know if this is going to be the end-all be-all. I don't know if – you know, it seems like Restoration Robotics is the only company at this point that's really going down this route. And I know it's difficult because every – increment, every change that they make has to go through an entire process. It's not like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go pick up at a 0.85 millimeter punch now and start going to work. It doesn't work that way.
No.
Everything's got to be approved. Everything has to be tested. Everything. I mean, in order for them to be able to use it with this device because they're being scrutinized by the FDA.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a big deal. So I don't know how easy it's going to be for another company to go down this route. But I guess it's possible. But whatever it is, I'm just hoping that they continue to get better and that the industry just becomes a much safer place. And for all the naysayers out there, for all the guys who were like – I know there were guys out there who were speaking to you at one point online saying, oh, now all of a sudden Joe's into FUE.
You know? It wasn't all of a sudden, but yeah. They used to say that.
Yeah, of a sudden, why? All of a sudden he's recommending FUE. Why is that? Well, you know what? And that's what I said at the beginning of the show, you know, or earlier on the broadcast is, you know, an evolving thought process to me is just, you know, it's wisdom. You know, you're learning.
Well, there are a couple of things. It's like, you know, going on 6 years ago now. I started to realize, you know, we're rehashing old stuff, but, you know, I was realizing that, okay, well, strip isn't the end all be all perfect procedure. I mean, I knew it wasn't perfect, but, I was starting to recognize the merits of FUE and I ceased doing the FUE bashing that I was so known for. I just didn't do it again. I was more, balanced in my critique of the different options.
Well, I would read that stuff and I'd be like, dude, you know, I mean, we weren't working together in this capacity, but obviously I knew you and I was like, this is not, you know, this is not great. And
yeah.
And I really believed, and, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of drank the Kool-Aid at the time.
You're wrong. No.
You kind of drank the Kool-Aid at the time.
There was some Kool-Aid drinking going on, no question about it. But like I was saying, you know, about 5-6 years ago, I started to see that I just couldn't deny it any longer. I couldn't, I couldn't keep my blinders on, and I started to embrace it. And I started talking to the doctors more about it, which is a whole other story. But, you know, the tide really turned for me when I was at the 2013 conference in San Francisco, and it was the first time I'd been to a conference in years, and strip wasn't even being talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually did a count of the different discussions being performed and all the different subject matter being discussed, and out of nearly 100 different events and lectures, strip was mentioned 12 times.
Sure.
And of those 12 times, it was being compared to FUE.
Right.
right? So there wasn't any sort of how to do strip type of discussions because no one gave a shit.
Well, and that's the thing. No new hair transplant surgeon is really considering even learning how to do strip, which I actually think is a disservice to patients.
It is. But, you know, that's when it kind of smacked me in the face. It's like, holy shit, this is like, you know, it's not only a valid procedure, it's at parity or, excuse me, at par now with strip based on the statistics that they came up with. It was just below parity with strip, but that year it was going to meet it and then start to exceed it, and that's what it's done. And, you know, it was a transition period for me where I was also noticing that, okay, lateral slit technique, while it's a great technique, isn't necessarily the best technique. And, you know, since 2010, my philosophy, my observation has been that, you know, just because this doctor doesn't do lateral slit or this doctor doesn't do this or that doesn't mean they're not getting great results, doesn't mean they're not having, you know, really happy patients on a consistent basis. So I realized the tool is only as good as the hand that wields it. And the same thing applies with the artist.